Hi, everybody. My name's Sandy Beach, and I'm an alcoholic. How you all doing? I'm really grateful everybody's here. It shows we have an interest in the fellowship and its history and principles, et cetera. So I'm tired. I just got back from Maine, and then I went to Washington earlier. They stay sober up there just like we do down here, and it was fun. If you haven't been here before, I just want to repeat the warning label on this talk ahead of time. This is not a step study. This is not a how to do the steps or a Joe and Charlie weekend or anything like that. This is simply somebody who's been around a long time, likes to tell stories, and I like to look back at some of the AA history that you may or may not be familiar with and talk about that, and then talk around the steps, talk about what are ways of describing them and what do they accomplish rather than the actual mechanics, and just end up with maybe a different view of what spirituality is. Because that's what spirituality is, a different view. It is being able to have the power to see things differently so that you really enjoy the world that you're in and could have enjoyed it all along had you been able to see it correctly. We have a tendency to only see problems through our problem-making eyes and our problem-making mind, and it doesn't enable us to see how wonderful everything really is. So that's really what stories are for, is to help us see through things. And I tried to get through the 40s and 50s and get into the 60s for this week, but I left out a couple things. I had them down, but I just didn't get to them. And so I got my trusty notes here. There was a lady who came into the New York office in the middle 40s named Nell Wing. And she became Bill's secretary until he died. And then she stayed on even longer and finally retired out of the New York office. And so she was our first archivist. She put together the wonderful collection that they have up in New York. All the old newspaper stories, the first editions, and all of the grapevines and photographs of all the big conventions, and it's really worth going to. And after she retired, she came down to Washington, D.C., where I lived, and it was really fun to get her to give a talk on the traditions because she typed them. And she was there working with Bill, putting these together and watching him agonize over, well, I don't know, this will be good and this will be that. And so she had a lot of little stories about that. And she passed away recently. And there was a big obituary column talking about all the work that she had done. And that was, she came in the 40s. And the other thing that was in the 40s, I forget whether I mentioned it or not, was the first Hollywood movie about the hopelessness of alcoholism called The Lost Weekend with Ray Milland, back when movies were in black and white. And that movie, I mean, he had the DTs and convulsions and the whole thing, and there was a joke in AA that if an alcoholic saw that movie, he would swear off movies. Because it was ruining his drinking to see that. And it was, and so that was, I remember that was going around when I came in, the Lost Weekend, yeah. Then in the 50s, I left out one or two things. Number one, AA Comes of Age, our first history book. Bill finally got that done. It's a little tedious compared to Pass It On and Dr. Bob and the Good Old Timers and Kurtz's books and so on down. But it was the first accounting where he went through his recollection of our history. It's got pictures, photographs, etc. Now, the other thing that took place in the 50s that needs to be understood, because we talk about this as if we really knew, and this is Bill Wilson and LSD. And we hear these stories all over the place. So let me tell you what happened. There were two doctors in Canada who had read about this LSD had been discovered in Switzerland, and some of the doctors there were having some success with schizophrenics in helping them see things more clearly. And so the doctors and the symptoms were kind of shocking, and it reminded the doctors of the delirium tremens, which are very scary. I don't know, we don't get them that often, but I had them and they were terrifying. So the original plan was, maybe if we gave some of this to alcoholics, it would scare them so much they would quit drinking. Well, it turns out that's not what happens. And the experience is an actual shattering or punching through the ego, allowing the actual spiritual experience to take place. And Aldous Huxley knew Bill Wilson very well, and he suggested that they consider this for the alcoholics who were not coming into AA, not for the alcoholics who are already in, but for the alcoholics who were resisting coming in, and maybe if they saw what a spiritual experience was like, they would come in. And so there was always this concern that we forget that we're just concerned in here with the alcoholics who get here. But a very small percentage get here. There's a whole bunch that don't get to come here. And so it was taken in a very controlled environment. Lois Wilson took some. Father Dowling went out there. Sam Shoemaker went out there. And as it was done in an extremely controlled fashion, there were no ill effects, and it looked promising. But of course, Bill doesn't keep anything a secret. He's not like a lot of us. He just announced to the whole AA world, I'm going out there and going to try this thing, LSD, and of course, that just opened up the gossip mill. Well, he's totally depressed, and he's going to get high on drugs. I mean, you know, hadn't even gone there yet. There's his depression. He's going to get high on drugs and go da 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 da. But he wanted to evaluate it and did so several times. And no, don't laugh. He didn't do that because it was for his own personal enjoyment. He really wanted to either include it or not include it, and he decided that it wouldn't be a good idea. And we're all familiar with what happened after it left the controlled environment. And Timothy Leary came along, and it was just handed out. And there was entirely different experiences. And so anyway, that was what happened. And Timothy Leary wanted Bill to come up and experiment up there, and he never went up and never met him, and didn't do anything with Timothy Leary. So that gets us to the 60s. In 1960 itself, Bill turned down Time magazine's offer to put him on the cover because he had done so much for the country and they wanted to recognize him. And if you've studied Bill Wilson's personality, this was hard to do. I mean, Dr. Bob would have turned it down in a heartbeat, but... And then they said, well, maybe we could have you turning sideways so they couldn't really make you out. And he just totally rejected it because it would set a precedent and other alcoholics would be suddenly putting almost their face on the front of the papers. And so they did a story without... his picture on the cover. Father Dowling died, and AA celebrated 25 years in Long Beach. We're starting to have the every 5 year conventions of AA, and they had 10,000 people show up in Long Beach. Then in 61, the founder of the Oxford Group died, Frank Buckman. And he was, of course, that went from the biggest thing in the world down to something very small called moral rearmament, and it really fell out of favor due to his talking favorably about Hitler at one point. And he regretted that later on when we all found out what Hitler really had in mind when he was starting out to save Germany. Then comes the Carl Jung letters. And they took place in 1961. And these are very important parts of AA history in that they are reprinted in the grapevine all the time. And it's Bill's letter to Dr. Jung and Dr. Jung's letter back to Bill. And then about 3 months later, Dr. Jung died. So it was very fortunate that this exchange took place when it did. And what Bill wanted to do was thank Dr. Jung for being a key player in starting AA. Because as we talked about in our first lesson on the history, a businessman named Roland Hazard, who was an alcoholic, went to see him with the hopes that he could fix him. And after a year, he sent him away, and he got drunk again, and he came back, and Dr. Jung, the world's greatest psychiatrist, told him there was nothing he could do for him, which induced total hopelessness, which is a big plus in dealing with alcoholics. And in that state of hopelessness, when he suggested that he go try and find a spiritual awakening, that some people had recovered from alcoholism with that, he went to the Oxford group and in turn rescued Ebbie Thatcher, got him sober, and Ebbie came and got Bill. So he wanted to write to him and tell him that, you know, this chain of events took place. And so he just briefly described Roland Hazard, and as a result of this, we now have AA is this big, it's in so many countries, and we have this many miracles, and you played a large part in it. And Dr. Jung wrote back, and he said, no, I didn't know what happened to Mr. Hazard. I'm so glad that he did, and I was trying to induce in him psychiatrically the equivalent of a spiritual awakening, because I always understood that I've studied alcoholics long and hard, that what they really have is a thirst for a spiritual awakening. They all sense there's something missing inside of them, and alcohol appears to fix it. And so it looks like a natural match, that it takes that empty hole and it's filled when we have the alcohol. And so that's why he sent Roland off to have this spiritual awakening. And then he went on to say something that was pretty interesting. He made an observation about human beings in general, because he had studied all types of human beings for somewhere around 60 years. And this is what he said. It's got nothing to do with AA, but it does. He said that human beings come here to this planet and they have to deal with evil. We would call it character defects. And they always lose. That was it. That was sort of the thing, that mankind just ain't going to make it. The universe is too cruel. And then he said one thing. The only exceptions are people who have spiritual awakenings and are in a society that helps them maintain that awakening. And that's us. Yeah, that's us. So when I read that, I just realized how lucky we are to have this terrible disease and be forced in here to have something that is one of the most precious experiences that mankind has. And that is to be able to see life and make sense out of it, find a purpose and feel inside of ourselves the part of the universe that we really are. Okay. 62, The Days of Wine and Roses came out. That was our next movie, and now the people in the audience go, oh, I remember that. There weren't too many heads going, Lost Weekend. Well, I don't know about that. A few old people in the back. 63, Sam Shoemaker, the minister at the Calvary Church in Washington, where the Oxford group met, he passed away. And these are all key players in the starting of AA, and now you can see, 30 years later, we're losing them all. They're all disappearing, the ones that we talked about earlier. 1964, the only major event that happened that year. There were three guys in Washington, D.C. that got sober that year, and they were called the Class of 64. And I'm the last one. The other two have passed away. That is being kept out of the history books. So I'm giving you unofficial information that'll probably never make the history books, but that did take place. We got a few more minutes, so let me talk about two things that happened in 65 and give you some background on this. The same two doctors that got Bill interested in LSD made another discovery that would be extremely helpful to alcoholics, and that would help the what's that sugar thing that when we overdo? Yeah, hypoglycemia. Almost all alcoholics had that. And this was going to be the great help for alcoholics with that problem. And it was called vitamin B3, niacin. Now, that I remember. Because all of a sudden, the buzz, it was all over. Bill Wilson says alcoholics should take vitamin B3. Now, and I mean, everybody went to the health food store. I mean, there wasn't anything, well, what is it, or anything like that. It didn't matter. Bill Wilson said vitamin B3, so everybody's down there. Now, if you take niacin instead of niacinamide, your face gets all blotchy red. And you're kind of like hyperventilating for a while. And there was a number of months where if you went to an AA meeting, it looked like everybody had a slip. And they're all in there. And I have no idea whether it helped with that. But he was absolutely sold on it. When he got his teeth into something, he wasn't going to let it go. And he would write letters everywhere to all the different states. This is it. Get the word out to the evidence. And then he set up a thing so people could write in and find out about it. And later on in the General Service Conference, they passed a thing that Bill couldn't receive mail about vitamin B3 through AA. He's going to have to set up a separate post office box and get it the hell out of, because that would be an opinion on an outside issue and all this kind of stuff. That went on, and then the conference in Toronto, which would be the 30th anniversary. And out of that conference came something that many of us found hard to understand. And out of that conference came, I am responsible. Wherever the hand needs AA and the hand of AA, and for that I am responsible. And the feeling that some of us had was, is everybody acting irresponsible now? Are we sitting in meetings and the newcomer comes in and we go, let's none of us go help him? I mean, did this need, in fact, to be said? It just seemed like it was, officially after 50 years announcing the new AA policy is don't drink. You know what I mean? That's how it appeared to a lot of us. Like, of course we're... I mean, the phone rings, you go. What's the deal? What is this? Well, there was more to it than meets the eye. If you recall in the 12 and 12, in step 12, Bill has a little paragraph there where he said, We went out and asked psychologists and people in the outside world to take a look at us now that we've been around quite a few years and are reaching maturity, and to evaluate us, quite frankly. And if you read that paragraph, it said these fine gentlemen evaluated us and, much to our chagrin, found out that we are in general childish, immature, and grandiose. And that's in the 12 and 12. You can just go read it. Now, Dr. Tebow was one of the, from High Watch, who got Marty Mann into AA, and he was a close friend and great supporter. But as he evaluated, he would just write to Bill and go, "Not grown up yet." And other psychologists would voluntarily send in or write articles that they've taken a look at AA and they have a long way to go to become a grown-up. So, if you're having problems having people believe that you're grown-up and responsible, at your big convention, you announce, "I am responsible." And it's hard to believe that that was one of the big pushes in doing that, but it was so important to build this. The outside world saw us as grown-ups. And I don't know if it's ever going to happen, to tell you the truth, that the people will say, "Yeah, I know a lot of AA members, they're very mature and grown up." That's what I think. I think we are responsible. I think we do meet our responsibilities and carry on in society and achieving success. But if they watch this in heavy traffic, or we get a letter saying, "You're really not the best in the world," which we take as total rejection, they would find that we still have a ways to go on this hike. Well, I'm almost through, so let me finish. 66, Bill's sponsor, Ebby, passed away. Dr. Tebow passed away, and Sister Ignatia passed away. And we've talked about all of those. So you can see, as the 60s are finishing out, there's very few of the original people except for Bill. Dr. Bob has passed away, and Hank Parkhurst, and a lot of the key players, and then all of the supporting outside people. And as we'll find out next week, then in 1971, Bill passed away. So it was very important to him that they completely transfer all responsibility for the well-being of Alcoholics Anonymous to the fellowship and the General Service Conference. And he had the hardest time from the middle 50s up until he died of being able to separate himself from the fellowship as a co-founder and just be a regular AA member. He couldn't just go to a meeting and go, "Hi, I'm Bill. Yeah, my thoughts on that." I mean, because they would all run over, and he was the co-founder. And it was, there would be so much pressure that he stopped taking speaking engagements and just spent a lot of time studying, writing out in, his place, I'm drawing a blank on that. Huh?
Stepping Stones.
Stepping Stones. Okay, so that's an update on the history, and now let's go into step 8. Now, what I want to do here is to go back and finish something with step 7, because we talked a lot about humility last week. And we have a tendency to make jokes about it as if it would be a bad thing to say that I'm humble. I mean, people, there's a, you know, if you say you're humble, it's gone. So let's look at some examples of practicing humility that everyone in this room does all of the time. You go to meetings in order to stay sober. rather than trying to stay sober on your own. That is a total act of humility. That is saying, I can't do this. I call my sponsor up for advice. That's total humility. That is saying, I can't run my own life on my own, which our pride would tell us we can. We're self-sufficient. And so we read AA literature looking for help in living our own lives. And so the more actions that we take that show we can't handle it on our own, that's the essence of humility. Leading up to, of myself I'm nothing, my higher power is everything. So every step we take towards getting more help and turning more things over is pure humility. So everyone in this room can say very comfortably, I get tremendous benefits from humility. And you would all be telling the truth. You get immense benefits from humility. And that's what we're supposed to learn out of this step. Stop trying to solve things on our own and ask for help, which is the essence of humility. It is the crushing of the pride and the ego and saying, there's no way I can manage this on my own. And so I just wanted to get that as the end of step 7. And of course, praying, meditating, all of that would fit into the same thing. That's a total act of humility. Now we come to the 8th step, which is, made a list of all the people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them all. We're continuing with our slide projector and our slides as an analogy to describe each one of the steps. And if you haven't been here before, we came up with a way of looking at spirituality by pretending that instead of being a human being, we are a slide projector, and we project up onto the real world, the screen of the real world, and then we look up there to see how the world is treating us, and we find lots of things wrong and disturbing and unfair. And we run up to the screen and try to move things around to make them more fair, because that's where we were trained. If you want to get things straightened out, go up and get the government straightened out and get your neighbor straightened out and get all it's all up there. That's where the problem is and that's where the solution is. And we come in here and we go, well, actually, if we projected a different slide, maybe it would be a different world. Maybe we are the total cause of all these problems. And in AA we say our problems are of our own making. So that means we made a lot of slides that when we project them, we don't like it. We find that very frightening. We find that very unfair. And there it is. I thought up my ideas about the world, made a slide. The world is unfair. Put it in the slide projector. I look up there and I go, my God, it is unfair. There it is. That proves it's unfair. And we go, but you put it together. No, it's unfair. It's up there. Go look. And so we've been going through the process of getting rid of these slides, which is what all of our program is. It is getting rid of old ideas until there's nothing of us left and white light shines through when you turn the projector on. And that light spiritually illumines the world so that we see it as God sees it. And so that's what this has been about. And so as we get to the 8th step, made a list of all the people we had harmed and became willing to make amends to them, we're now going to get out the slides of how we harm people. And we're going to take a look at this. And we're going to find later on that they come in, got a little slide for gossiping, we got a little slide for being unfaithful, we got a little slide for anger, we got a little slide for self-pity. Oh, look at poor me, and then we inflict that on everybody out there, and we wonder why they don't treat us well. And so, but when we get here, this is another one of the steps where in the big book, it's just very brief. It's just about 8 sentences. And it simply says, well, we already made this list when we took the 4th step, and so now we want to develop a willingness to go out and make amends for any harm that we've done. And then in the 9th step, it goes on to discuss how these amends are made, how to approach certain people, etc., etc. But there's no real discussion of the in-depth of the list itself and what harm is. What do we mean by harm? We harm people. So, as you go to the 12 and 12, you see a whole big insight into step 8. So you see 6, 7, and 8 are really quite powerful in the 12 and 12. And then we get to 9, both books are dynamite. 10, both books are dynamite. So, but these three, I've always felt it extremely helpful. That's why we study 12 and 12 here on Sunday nights. And right off the bat, we find out about forgiveness. This becomes the lead way of approaching this particular chore, which are the slides where we harm people. Because without forgiveness, we look at these and conclude that it's partially their fault. And I know I acted terribly, but they made me do it. They made me do it. If they didn't do that, I never would have dumped all the beer all over their living room. You see what I mean? And we're transferring responsibility for our own actions over to other people, which was our specialty before we got to AA. And so forgiveness, as we start down the list, and Bill suggests that we, yes, take the 4-step list, but also let's go look more closely at harm. And all the way back to when we were children, we go back as far as we can think, because not only do we want to go make the amends, we want to get the slides changed so that we don't do it anymore. And that allows us to have an entirely different view up there in the future. And so forgiveness is almost like a magic spot remover. And just the act itself starts letting light through these various incidences, because it takes a lot of the anger that we have over the event and reduces it. And as we get to taking a look at this list, what is harm? And he described it as instincts in collision. The world is made up of people who are trying to go get something that's going to make them happy. And they get in each other's way. And we are, no, I need that. I want him. I want this. And there's a great confrontations taking place all the time because none of us have used the spiritual tools to see we already have everything we need. We don't have to be going out after anything, which will come out of an awakening. And so that causes us to live in complete absence of harmony with the fellow inhabitants of this planet. And as we live in not in harmony with people, we end up doing something that alcoholics are specialists in, bringing out the worst in everyone. We just seem to have that knack. I've never seen that neighbor so mad till you came over here. I didn't know he could get that mad. And that's not just when we're drinking. This is our self-centeredness before we get rolling on changing. And here's the exact thing. As we have these slides that bring out the worst in people, we look up and we live in a rotten world filled with people who are just at odds with me all the time. Little did I know that I was the reason they are behaving so rottenly. And I tell this story every time I'm on this particular principle to show you the point. My sister now has 30 years in AA up in Connecticut. And back when she had about 15, my parents had their 50th wedding anniversary. And she was arranging a party up there and was going over the guest list with me. And she went down and said, oh, good, I've got that cousin, this coming, blah, blah, blah. And she got to one uncle. And I said, do we have to invite him, Sue? He's so obnoxious. I mean, we have this wonderful event, and then bingo, he comes in, spoils it. I mean, our parents deserve better. And my sister said, he only does that when you're around. He's a great guy. Everybody loves him. Now, if I wasn't in AA and she wasn't in AA, I never would have believed her. I know me. I know I wouldn't do something like that. I don't misread people that badly that this guy is actually wonderful. But since she, I said, okay, maybe, and then I said the words that we all hate to say, maybe I'm wrong. What a revolutionary thing to say. Well, maybe I'm wrong. So I said, well, maybe I'm wrong. He is the greatest guy, so I'm going to run up and just give him a big hug and tell him how happy I am to see him. I'm going to just go overcome how I feel and run up. And I did that, and he went, hi, well, I'm so glad to see you. And it was like magic. And I spent a lot of time talking to him during that thing, learning about who he was. Like, really, you do that? Well, I didn't know. I'll be darned. Of course, we never talked because I was being rude to him, and he was reacting to it. So anyway, this is, you can see right there how we're changing a slide and seeing an entirely different uncle up there. Only he was always that way. I was malfunctioning and was seeing very unpleasant things that I created. I just put it together and it appeared up there. And so this is what we're going to accomplish in this. And as we stop bringing out the worst in people and start bringing out the best in people, guess what the world starts looking like? You start going through your day wondering where all these nice people came from. Where have they been? God, I had the most pleasant exchange picking up my dry cleaning. It was just amazing. And I got over at McDonald's, they smiled at me, and I'm giving them the chance. I mean, geez, I don't know what everybody's on these days, but it's quite pleasant out there. We had no idea that we were in charge of the world we lived in. That what we were manufacturing in our projection booth was what we actually got out there. So you can see how valuable it's going to be to really look at this. This isn't being done to go make some other people feel better. They might not feel better when we make amends. It's being done so that we can get rid of the broken slides, the incorrect ones, and that we can create a different future for ourselves. Now, maybe it's going to make some people feel better. Maybe it's going to have positive results when we actually go do the ninth step. But the eighth step is strictly has to do with readjusting things in the projection booth for ourselves. And so Bill suggests a few slides that you might have in your collection of how to get along with people. And I copied them down out of the book. How about anger? I just like to go around with sort of a so that people don't screw with me. If you, you know, if you give them that look, they just leave you alone. You don't have to worry about it. So, you know, I'm really scared to death. I go like this. And that's how I kind of interact. And you go, really? And what kind of results do you get? People don't like me that much. I don't have that many close friends, but at least nobody's taking advantage of me, I can tell you that. You see what I'm saying? That may be your slide. Oh, got to react with people. Hey, how you doing? You know. Okay, what else do we have in the thing? How about, and I know no one in the room, lying. Where were you? Playing golf. And then your buddy comes home and says, wasn't that movie great? I thought you said we were playing golf. Well, I was just kidding. And then we wonder why nobody trusts us. What's the matter? They don't. They're always looking where I'm going. She doesn't trust me. Wonder why. You follow what I'm saying? Tom I has 50 years in AA, and I was talking to him at a convention one time, and I said, Tom, do you have a problem with lying? And he said, it's the first thing out of my mouth. Somewhere when I was little, I learned that the truth could be dangerous. And so if I'm over here and somebody said, where were you? I said, on the farm. No, actually, I was over here. I mean, he always corrects himself, but he still finds this pattern. And I was sharing with him. I remember doing that exact same thing. I've been sober a long time, and I finally got to retire a little bit up in Washington. And I went out and dragged my little golf cart around every day trying to break 80. You golfers know, if you could just get that done, if you could just get that done. And finally, one day, I had a 78. And there was the cart and everything, and I could hardly wait to see my AA golfing buddies who we hung out and everything. And so they're there, and I said, I got news. Sit down. I want to tell you guys something. And they said, what? I said, I had a 77. Now, a 78 was a wonderful thing. And then I had to go back later and go, you know, I was lying. I really had a 78. And they said, well, we don't believe that either. I ruined the whole thing when the truth was absolutely acceptable and wonderful. I had to change it. And so you could see those guys, I mean, that changed a little bit how we got along. Unfaithful. Well, I don't have to mention that because nobody does that in here. And it's devastating. And we just are, I don't know, I can't believe how that happened. And so we're going, there's something I need to get changed. And I it's more prevalent. I have to, you read, I can't remember where it is in the big book. Bill's talking about the various problems that we have. We owe money, we do this. And then he says, we've been unfaithful to our wife and we're way behind on the alimony. That's a common problem. And I went, oh my God. Miserly. We got the money, but we're not going to dole it out. We're just going to make them suffer. I know they think I could help them. Might do that with your kids. Yeah, I'm sorry, the budget's too tight. I got to say no to you. Callous, very indifferent. Yeah, that's nice. I just graduated from college. Yeah, good deal, big deal. I'm glad you did. You see, each one of us has some of these slides. And this is our way of interacting. Who knows how we got started on it? It may go way back, but this becomes our little deal. Somebody gets promoted at work, and we go, why didn't I get promoted? So we barely congratulate him. Oh, nice going. So we don't want to really add to their joy, but let's subtract from their joy. Why? You know, why not participate in their happiness? I don't know. I'm sort of a joy killer. Cynical. I mean, what a weapon that is. And Bill listed all of these in the 12 and 12. Cynical. Yeah, I just decided to go to college. Dad, I'm going to work my way through. Well, we'll see. That really gave him a lot of confidence, didn't it? Yeah, we'll see. Almost like, I seriously doubt it. And then we play that one. Cold. You know that look? Not involved. Just like ice. Why we do that? Why is that? We can protect our emotions. We're never going to get involved. We'll never get hurt. Just stay Mr. Loner. Impatient. Okay, how long is this going to take? You ever do that and you just drive people crazy when they're trying to get stuff done? Impatient. Critical. I think everybody in the room knows how that works. Yeah, it's nice, but are you sure you like this color? I know you painted it and you think it's a good color, but have you asked anybody else about the color that you chose for your house? And are you sure you asked people about those drapes? I mean, I don't want to say that it's not perfect, but why is that? Dominating, that we can feel safe because we're in charge. And we just dominate. I remember sometimes with new people, I'll go, listen, we're going out to dinner tonight, and I want you to listen to the amount of time that each person talks. And we were there for 30 minutes, and that person talked 28. You follow what I'm saying? And there was no room for anybody else to participate. Didn't even realize it. Dominating. Hey, well, I like me the most, and I'm sure everybody else would like to hear about me the most. It's the most exciting thing there is to hear about me. So let me tell you one more story about me, and then you'll see how wonderful it is. Gossip. What's there to say? We want to get rid of it, but it's too much fun. So as I said earlier, we give up originating it and we simply become a telephone wire to allow it to go from this side of the room to that where it's supposed to be going anyway, and I'm just helping. I'm really not a gossiper. I'm simply passing on information that may be useful to this side of the room about your misfortune. And my favorite, which is very rare in AA, self-pity. And that's the first time I ever saw a sentence where it said, we inflict self-pity on others. But you know what that is? It's just, there's never smiling. And whatever we got, hey, we're going to go to the baseball game. Yeah, but I don't feel that it would be fun. I don't know why I should go. And let me tell you what happened to me. Matter of fact, I'll tell you what happened to me at the game. Because I don't want you to enjoy the game at all. And I just want to tell you what he said and what he did. and it's the seventh inning, and it's still going on and on and on about our problems. Fortunately, we never hear anything like that at discussion meetings. So, we would never inflict our self-pity on fellow alcoholics at discussion meetings. So you can see what we're doing. We're going to start changing our repertoire that we have of behavior, of patterns. We've collected these. This is what we put in the projector. Oh, that situation, click, covered. I got it. That's how I always do it. And we're going to see what it causes and what it causes us to see. And then we're going to come up with a new plan, which is to live in harmony. How can I adjust to them instead of making them adjust to me? That is a totally different, guaranteed winning perspective. And I'll give you an example of that. It was discussed up in Maine at one of the meetings. And the discussion was, groups are stopping the Lord's Prayer at meetings and switching to the Serenity Prayer. Now, the discussion was, what do we think about that? Every group's autonomous, doing a damn thing they want. So it came down to motives. If, in a group, somebody said, wouldn't it be fun to learn a Jewish prayer and sing it at our meeting to welcome our Jewish friends? And everybody liked it, that would be a very spiritual and wonderful change. On the other hand, if the reason for changing was, I don't like it, it offends me. What principle are we putting in there? We're trying to learn spirituality, nothing about politics, spirituality. The principle of the program is to teach us to adjust to the situation and not demand that the situation adjust to us. So that would be a lousy reason for changing from a spiritual point of view. You see the difference? It's difference at night and day. I want this change because it bothers me. That's our self-pity, self-centered. And once we get over that and can be happy with whatever the group decision is, we're going to see a whole different world up there. Not one that has to be changed to fit my self-centeredness. Anyway, we get to the end of the line, and just looking ahead, amends themselves are the cleansing agent on all these slides. That is what erases them. That the willingness to make these amends and then to go out and to actually contact the people, either with letters or in person or by phone or whatever our sponsor advises, takes all of this past pattern and gets rid of it. And we are going to start seeing a totally different world. So the step really is something that's going to benefit us all. From a spiritual point of view, this is where we really start making huge spiritual changes and breakthroughs. So much so that the promises come after the next step. Big deal. The biggest deal in AA are those promises. And look where they're coming. They're coming right here when we're going to go in and fix the interpersonal relationship slides. So what could we say? Be thorough. Think of everything where you are obnoxious. Don't leave anything out, because you are going to be the beneficiary as you watch all of this disappear and this new world appear in its place. We're at the end of the time. Thanks, everybody, for staying awake. And we'll wrap it up. We'll wrap it up with the Lord's Prayer for anybody who would care to join in.